Well, happy Sabbath. Good afternoon. The Feast of Tabernacles for me meant one thing: Wisconsin Dells. Growing up, that was the place we went year after year after year. A happy memory I have are the triathlons in Wisconsin Dells. You might ask yourself, was there really a triathlon in Wisconsin Dells? Did you really enjoy it? Well, this wasn't the average triathlon. The events started with go-karts. The second was putt-putt golf. And then we finished up with video games. That was the ideal triathlon for middle school and high school in Wisconsin Dells. Those of you that might have been there would remember, I think the castle had the fastest go-karts. For putt-putt, Pirate's Cove, and Noah's Ark. Also, video games dates me, but there was a black and white football game. You could go one-on-one, and there was a little black ball that you would have to run. There were four plays. It was black and white. I played that so long I would have blisters, but that was just the ideal thing. After services, where would we start the triathlon? Go-karts, putt-putt, video games. One year, there became an added difficult question, a dilemma. Now, growing up, family didn't go out to eat very often, so going out to eat at the feast was a treat. Dessert was a really special treat. Wisconsin Dells had a restaurant called Family Chef. It's a little bit like Frisch's Big Boy here. They had the best strawberry pie. Huge strawberries, beautiful, large, whipped cream, a flaky crust. It was amazing. They also had a really good hot fudge sundae. Now, a dilemma for a guy in high school, what are you going to choose? Triathlon's been completed. It's been a great day, great meal. Then I realized, it's the feast. Why say or when you can say and? As a high school kid, I remember enjoying, one time only, both desserts, strawberry pie and a hot fudge sundae. And when that was over, I was very content. If I did that today, I would probably be sick. So I wouldn't recommend that for anybody. But I remember that moment of a day that was just amazing, fun, and two desserts bring contentment. What about you? Do you have times when you remember feeling contented? Your own version of a triathlon with two desserts. If it was food related, maybe it's Thanksgiving. It's not really, though, tied to food to be content. Sometimes after a hard day's work, enjoying fruit of your labor. Knowing that you've done your best for an event or a contest that required practice or full effort that went well. But what about your life today? What about you sitting here today? Do you feel content? My goal for today is for you to be content, learning more about being content. So today we'll discuss what contentment is and three scriptures to amplify the meaning, so that hopefully we will be contented and even more contented going forward. Now, it might not be able to touch a similar level as a combination of strawberry pie and a hot fudge sundae, but we can learn together how to increase true contentment in our lives. A heads up, two of the three scriptures that we'll be looking at are some very famous scriptures that I didn't realize. The sentence right before the famous part of the scripture talks about being contented. So let's start with 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 6. As we turn there, let's define what is contentment. Our friend Daniel Webster says it means that you're happy enough with what one has or is. Happy enough with what one has or is. That's the state of being happy and satisfied. A state of satisfaction. And it's peace regardless of external circumstances. So regardless of external circumstances, a person could be content. And it can be found by appreciating what one has rather than constantly striving for more. So 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 6. This highlights something is going to have great gain. It's the combination of godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing in this world, it's certain we can carry nothing out. Having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. So content's mentioned twice there. First of all, the combination of godliness with contentment is great gain. He's writing to Timothy, who is the pastor of Ephesus. Ephesus, anybody that's been on the Turkey tour, it's an amazing city how well preserved it is. If you haven't been there, I'd encourage you to go there. It was a very wealthy city. But great gain isn't something with regarding the wealth in Ephesus. Great gain is the combination of godliness with contentment, and that's great gain. Also, where this says, "And having food and clothing, this shall be content," the word for clothing actually means covering. So it's both clothing and a roof over your head. So if you think of the basic Maslow's hierarchy, if you have food, if you have clothing, if you have shelter, then with those we shall be content. So that's the starting point. Socrates has a quote, "Contentment is natural wealth. Luxury is artificial poverty." Contentment is natural wealth. Luxury is artificial poverty. Let's turn to Philippians chapter 4 and verse 11. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 11. This will be the second scripture. It's a very famous section. Before we start talking about this, let's think about a little bit of background for this verse. Who's writing it? Paul. Paul had some of the most difficult challenges of any one recorded in the Bible. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, or sorry, 2 Corinthians chapter 11. He was beaten. He was shipwrecked. He was shipwrecked three times. He was floating day and night in the deep. He wrote Philippians from prison. And with that perspective, in verse 8, he talks about whatever things are noble, true, good, pure. Think on these things. So he wrote that not lounging out on a beach, looking at a beautiful ocean. He wrote this from a prison. Verse 11, "Not that I speak in regard to need, for I've learned whatever state I'm in to be content. I know how to be abased, I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need." And now this is the verse that leads into the very famous verse, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." Barclay's commentary points out, this is changing from a viewpoint of self-sufficiency to Christ-sufficiency. So in verse 13, Paul's writing from prison, and he can think back to all of the tough things he's been through, and he was able to say, with Christ, "I can do all things who strengthens me," writing this from prison. It's interesting as far as some of the words that were used here, abased, abound, hungry. Here are some definitions of those words, and then we'll read the scripture one more time. The word abased is not a word that we use frequently, but it means to live humbly. So I know how to live humble is what he's saying. He also knows how to live with abounding. And that word means superabound or to be in excess. So there were times when he had no worry about what he was going to be eating. There's also a time where he was abased. There were times when he was filled, which means to be satisfied or to fatten. Maybe it's a strawberry pie and a hot fudge sundae. Separately, there were times when he was hungry. And that word means he was famished or to crave. There were times that he suffered need, where he felt inferior, and it's to fall short is what that word means. So to put this together, he knew how to live humbly. He knew how to live with superabound. He knew how to be satisfied. He knew what it was like to be famished and to crave. He also knew what it was like to suffer need. And this was also considering he was shipwrecked three times. That's bad luck. So if I was on a boat, it's like, Paul, we don't want to be on the same ship. But he was also content floating for a day and a night in the deep. So in the midst of difficult circumstances, always seeking to be content. Let's read this verse 11 again then. "Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content." To be content, not self-sufficient, but to be Christ-sufficient in whatever state we're in. "I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need." And that's what sets up the importance of being Christ-sufficient. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Let's turn to the third verse we'll be reviewing today, Hebrews chapter 13. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5. Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. This is what happens right before the next verse. For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. We can be content in our current situation, whatever that is, and we have a promise, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Now, I would like to play a little game, because being content doesn't mean being complacent. So you could say, I have to be content in my current situation. Well, that's sure. But what if you're stuck in the mud? Should you try to get out of the mud, or should you just be content staying in the mud? Be content where you're at, but get out of the mud. What if you were shipwrecked and you're floating? Should you just stay in the ocean forever, or should you find a way to try to get away from the sharks? I would encourage you to not confuse being content with being complacent. Being content is being understanding of your current situation. Being complacent is saying, whatever it is, I'm stuck in the mud. So here's the game. I'll give three situations, and it's not going to be a vote, but just think in your mind, is this a situation where a person's being content or complacent? First situation, my mom and my mother-in-law in the last month have both been in the hospital. My mom fell, fractured, dislocated her shoulder. Tough time for her. My mother-in-law, several of you prayed for her, thank you. Difficult toe infection, it can be serious. Both of them were in the hospital. They were kind to everybody they met. They were very compliant with the doctor. They did everything that the doctor asked of them, and they were very kind to the nurses. Would that be content or complacent? I'd say that's content. They didn't cause their situation directly. They're in a situation in the hospital. That's a time to be content and understand in a difficult situation, do the best you can to then get out of the hospital. Do the best you can to get back to strength. But also, if our energy's down, if we're not feeling well, consider, well, what can we do to help ourselves from a health perspective? Eat, move, sleep. So think about diet, think about exercise, think about sleep. And if we can improve those things, maybe that can help our health and help us stay out of the hospital to not have to then be worried about being content. Second question, second category. So the first was health, content or compliant, complacent, very easy. Mom and my mother-in-law were very content in a difficult situation, doing the best they could. Second situation, education. Few kids out here, a lot of smart kids. Upcoming jelly, the jelly episode, the Bible Bowl, I'm excited to see. Lots of smart kids. Let's imagine that somebody out there was a very good fifth grader last year. They were smart, they did everything just exactly right. They had a great year. Now they could be questioning, do I really need to go to sixth grade? I'm content. I had a good fifth grade year. I've gone far enough with education, then that's far enough. Well, of course not. That would be complacency. From an education perspective, we should all strive to be lifelong learners. Fifth grade isn't quite far enough. Continue with that education, both formal and informal, trade schools, schools, whatever it is, seek an education, but then just beyond that in life, be a lifelong learner. I'd encourage that for all, to not be complacent there. So we should not just be content with whatever we've learned to date. Last item. Finances, content or complacent? What if income's tight, but a person chooses to live within their means and is thankful for what they have? Content or complacent? Content. Paul knew how to be content in good times and in poor, but I'd like to share a lesson I learned at Ambassador College when I first got there, and I was there just on a shoestring, literally budgeting toothpaste, and a statement was, if your outgo exceeds your income, you've got a choice to make. You can choose to grow your income or reduce your outgo or ask for help. But that's an unsustainable situation if the outgo exceeds the income. True for finances, true for life. So wrapping this up, there's a quote from Daniel Defoe. All of our discontents spring from a lack of thankfulness for what we have. So there's a direct connection between being content and being thankful. Our brain is wired that we can't be scared, worried at the same time as being thankful. So if we're having a time that we're concerned, scared, bothered, worried, be thankful. We're encouraged to rejoice. We're encouraged to be thankful for all times or all things. And that shifting of our perspective can really help. I do think Pollyanna gets a bad rap. We can play the glad game or play the thankful game. We should be real with where we're at. If we're stuck in the mud, we're stuck in the mud. But don't be complacent to stay where we're at. Let's continue to be content, but then seek to improve. So we can consider the scriptures that we reviewed about being content, including that godliness with contentment, it's great gain. Not just gain, it's great gain. We can imitate Paul to consider to be content in any circumstance. Amazingly, to be content while being shipwrecked, to be content while being chased out of town, to be content while both being abased and while abounding. And finally, that we should avoid the love of money to be content, knowing that God will never leave us nor forsake us.